The field of mental health counseling is growing rapidly, and Richmond Graduate University can equip you with everything you need as a licensed professional counselor while integrating your faith into your clinical practice. Programs are offered in Atlanta, Chattanooga, and online. Apply today at richmont.edu. That's richmont.edu.
I'm Earlonne Woods.
I'm Nigel Poor. We're the hosts and creators of Ear Hustle from PRX's Radiotopia.
Ear Hustle is a show about life inside prison, but it's not your typical prison podcast.
In this next season, we've got stories about the objects people keep inside their prison cells,
about residents in a women's prison who say they want to stay there,
and the most beautiful prison garden. Earlonne, I will never forget it.
Ear Hustle, stories about life on the inside told by those who live it.
Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Political Breakfast right here on WABE. We are so glad that you're here. We're so glad that you are listening. I'm Lisa Ram, and with me today, strategist Brian Robinson, as well as Theron Johnson. Happy holidays to both of you. I hope you had great turkey days.
Oh, it was fantastic. And we got another big dogs win, which has really capped off my holiday season as we cruise
doesn't
into
that get
the SEC
boring?
Championship.
Doesn't that get boring after a while? I mean, like Alabama did.
Well, it's like Trump said, we're going to win so much, we're going to get sick of winning. Please, please, no more winning. I can't take it. No more winning.
No more winning. Kirby Smart, right.
Theron, how was yours? It was good. Go Dogs. Big win. I would tell you, Lisa, you know, I worked out this morning and, I put on a couple pounds through Thanksgiving. And, you know, those leftovers, man. I mean, I was looking at my boy Plies. He's a rapper. I know Lily knows who he is. Brian probably don't know who Plies is. But he gives you sort of this countdown, Lisa. So he's like, all right, Friday, you can warm the leftovers up. That's good. Saturday, you're pushing it. Sunday, you probably may die. Gotta slow down. But no, definitely. Enjoyed Thanksgiving and great time spending with my family.
Well, good, mm-hmm. good. We all had a great time. And I hate to do this, but I want to jump in with a real downer. One would think the holidays would kind of provide a respite, from all the jury news. But, that's naive thinking. It doesn't. We here in Atlanta are fresh off another tragedy, the one involving a 12-year-old boy being shot and killed near Atlantic Station Saturday. A group of teens out and about said to be fighting. And, after all was said and done, of course, we had the 12-year-old dead. I believe a 15-year-old is on life support. And several handguns were found on the scene. So now a lot of people in Atlanta, the city of Atlanta, is on edge again. And I just wanted to check in with you all. How do you all feel about this, after this big talk on crime prevention that we've had this past year?
Well, Lisa, I'll tell you this. I mean, you're absolutely right. You go to Thanksgiving, you spend time with your family, and it's really sort of Thanksgiving to me is where you really are getting ready for the holiday season. And, of course, the Dogs are winning. The Hawks are doing well. I'm not going to talk about the Falcons, big loss on Sunday. But, it was just very tragic to, go online. And I actually was traveling down 85 and was wondering why all these cop cars were sort of going towards Atlantic Station, and then to just go on social media and see that there was a mass shooting and then the life of a 12-year-old young kid lost his life in gunfire. So look, I immediately wanted to say, hey, what can I do? What can I encourage the community to do more of? And then of course, you feel for the mayor, you feel for Chief Sheerbaum, DA Funny Willis and the superintendent, Lisa Herring, was there, right? Because I think that, she felt the need to be there because I assumed that the kid was an APS student or maybe some APS students were involved. And so I really appreciate their leadership, but it wasn't just Atlanta, Lisa. I mean, we had mass shootings in DeKalb County teens. And so I'm going back and forth, I'm like, all right, I know it's guns. It's the more guns that are on the street, people are getting them legally or illegally. And, but also I'm like, all right, that's a long-term solution. You got to work on legislation to get that pulled back. But it's also, I got to say this, I think it's parental involvement. It's really calling on parents to really make sure that we're putting our children in the right places. Last thing I'll say, Lisa, I didn't know this. I used to live in Atlantic Station. It still is, but still the place where you want to leave, particularly if you're a professional. But they have a 3 p.m. curfew in place. And, you know, special shout out to Andre Dickens, Mayor Dickens, for just being real about, you know, giving us updates. And a lot of people were very concerned. So I'm upset. I definitely think that it's too many guns on the streets. Guns are leading to unnecessary, senseless deaths. But also, I think that we as a community, we've got to come together and talk about giving our teens other options rather than hanging out in Midtown Atlanta, having a fight, and then it ultimately leading to gunfire that, you know, we're losing, you know, could be potential multiple lives.
Yeah. Brian, how did the news move you?
Well, we have had this recurring conversation on this show because we've had this recurring issue happening in our society, not just in Atlanta, not just in Georgia, but around the country. And in fact, if anything, you know, I always say, knock on wood, while we do have this crime issue, and that's what this is, like violent crime, you know, interpersonal crime that we've had here, we have been different than other states. Again, knock on wood, we haven't had the massacres in schools the way that they had in South Florida and Connecticut and Texas, and God forbid. How do I react? I react emotionally more than rationally. I react with pain. I react as a father. That is how I approach these things. Whenever I hear about children, I think about my baby, and that is what I visualize, is her and her school. And the people that she's around. Now, granted, she's not 12. She's not an age where people are carrying around guns illegally, but it's still where my mind goes. I am not an expert on how we fix these pathologies, and I am not on this show as an expert on that. On the politics side, let me say first that Andre Dickens does exactly what you should do in these scenarios. He leads. He puts his face on the problem as a person with solutions. He shows up. It is 101 of how you handle these situations. Does he have a magic wand? No, but showing up, it shows empathy, it shows concern, it shows a desire for action. So kudos to him. I think that's something that was missing here during the previous administration. There was a lack of a urgency to get out in front of these issues. And I know we're always going to turn to constitutional carry in Georgia. Is this because people are allowed to carry guns without permits? No, it's not. No 12-year-old, no kids at this age would ever be legally carrying, which kind of gets to the whole issue of the constitutional carry. It's not about criminals having guns. It's about law-abiding citizens having guns and being able to protect themselves from people who are dangerous. So I don't think, I know there's going to be this desire to draw that correlation. And I think Theron said a couple of great things. One, parents' involvement is really, if there is an extra to the pathologies, it is involved parents. And there has got to be some policy solution, but, you know, I know the Democrats go straight to gun control. And I just don't know that in America, where there's 300 million firearms out there in private possession, that's really a legitimate path forward.
Yeah, falling in the hands of teenagers. Well, we're glad to have a special guest today who, you know, I think can add perspective and perhaps comfort, maybe, for those of us who are just simply tired of all of this. Tanya Miller is an accomplished former prosecutor and civil rights lawyer. She is a former lawyer for the Department of Justice and former Fulton County Assistant District Attorney. She has extensive background in advocacy, investigations, criminal law, constitutional rights, community relations, and crisis management. And Tanya, I want to bring you in on that aspect because I think this is a crisis in the city of Atlanta. Welcome to Political Breakfast, and you know, give us your thoughts.
Wow, thank you, Lisa. It's great to be here, and I think you're right. Look, I have a unique perspective because a lot of folks who aren't working on the front lines of criminal justice really only hear about these things when they're on the news. But I can tell you that the problem of violent crime happening, gun crime happening in our communities, is pervasive. It is prolific. And what we see on the news is only scratching the surface of it. Our nation, our state, our city, I mean, we just have a gun crime problem, and we're not going to solve it overnight. I think both Theron and Brian have hit on really sort of the crux of the complexity of the issue. It gets to be overwhelming. But I think if you think about it in sort of two categories, one is we've got to deal with the people who are both committing the violent crime, who are getting access to the guns, and what is happening in our community with our kids, whether we're talking about poverty, education, job opportunity, parental issues. All of those things are complicated and tough and big to grapple with in and of themselves singularly, but we've got to grapple with all of them. And then secondly, we cannot have a conversation about gun violence without talking about guns. And look, you know, no, this 12-year-old could not have legally possessed a gun. That's right. But I think the problem with constitutional carry and some of these other policies that we have in the state, while they might not be directly related to this incident and incidents like it, they are certainly indirectly related, because the more guns we put in public spaces, the easier it is for people to carry gun in places where, you know, we have dinner with our kids, where we shop, when we're at Target, when we're at the gas station, the less safe we become. Because here's what happens. I take my gun to a restaurant. I don't have a permit. I might be a responsible gun owner. I might decide to leave my gun in the car. But that doesn't stop the 12-year-old, the 15-year-old, the 16-year-old from breaking in my car, stealing my gun. And now that gun is all of our problems. It is in the public space. So all of these things have to be addressed. And I think I agree with you. Mayor Dickens is on the right path. But this is going to be a sustained effort, and people are going to have to stick with it for the long haul. We will not change course overnight. And so that's where I think it gets tough.
Yeah, that 12-year-old's mother went public yesterday, and she said that 17 and 18-year-olds were recruiting her son to break in cars and you know, steal whatever. But what I found interesting is she said she begged for help. She begged for help over and over again because she knew her child was going down the wrong path. She said she contacted police at least 30 times and was told that they could do nothing. What can you say when you have a parent? You know, Andre Dickens said our parents need to get involved, but you have a parent who was concerned and went to law enforcement and still didn't get the help that was needed.
Right. And so, you know, in all fairness to law enforcement, sometimes those issues aren't issues that they can get involved in. We have got to understand and realize that if we're going to attack gun violence in our communities, we have got to start addressing the pathologies that are happening to our kids at a young age. It is not popular to talk about it, but we've got to start talking about the young age at which these kids are being recruited by gangs. And if you are a child who is living in poverty, you are a deprived child, you have a parent who may be working hard to make ends meet, but because, you know, they are working hard, they can't be there all the time. And there is a seductive lifestyle of crime that you are being lured into, you know, that's a real thing that's happening. And I know we want to just say gun control, gun control, gun control. And we do have to talk about sensible gun measures that make us safer. But we also have to talk about what is happening to kids at such a young age in our schools. And so it requires us to be doing intervention as early as elementary school age. We have got to be giving kids alternative choices to that lifestyle, giving kids mentors, giving kids life coaches, giving kids mental health treatment. I can't tell you that in my experience as a prosecutor and now a defense lawyer, young African-American boys and men are probably the most neglected population of Americans when it comes to mental health assessment, whether we're talking about anxiety, experiencing trauma, PTSD, and literally having no outlet for that. So all of those things are going to have to be addressed collectively and in a targeted way.
Lisa, I was going to jump in here and ask State Representative-elect Miller a question. Lisa talked about, and you talked about a little bit too, as far as the gang recruitment. So my question is two-part. You know, we've heard Mayor Dickens and Chief Sherbaum and others, and then DA Fani Willis talk about the gang challenges, and even Governor Kemp. Let's be fair. you know, about the gang problem in Georgia. So just really not asking you to be an expert on it, but just to really maybe give our listeners sort of a snapshot of how robust the gang activity still is in our city. And then two, you know, you going into a legislative process, you will take office in the beginning of January as a newly elected state representative. What are some of the things I would like to know that the Republicans and Democratic freshman members are kind of talking amongst yourselves about what you feel you guys can do around introducing new laws or strengthening laws to make sure that we address this public safety crisis?
Mm-hmm. So to your first question, I would say to you that I think gangs are a significant problem in our community. I think I view them a little bit differently because, you know, honestly, the 8-year-old who gets recruited sort of grows up into that lifestyle and then becomes a 17 or 18 or 19-year-old who is then recruiting. But these are young kids. These are young men who I have seen turn their lives around if we have the appropriate structures, if we are targeting that population with what I would say the appropriate sort of life skills building infrastructure, we can make a difference in their lives. And I think it's important that we start focusing on that and doing so. Look, we got to give people the alternative. If you want to put the guns down and stop shooting, we will help you. But if you want to continue shooting, we will hold you accountable. And I think that is the message that we're hearing from Mayor Dickens, from Fannie Willis, and from the other stakeholders. And I think that's the appropriate message. As far as what I think we can do as legislators, look, I think we need to follow the example of the bipartisan group of senators who, you know, sort of collectively came together to make some progress. In the space of common sense gun reform, Congress passed the Safer Communities Act, which provides for millions of dollars and community-based anti-violence measures. Like, we need to be doing that. We need to be having those conversations. How do we support Mayor Dickens and other leaders on the local level who are trying to grapple with this very complicated issue? How are we funding education? How are we treating the loopholes in our gun laws? How can we stem the tide of all of these guns purchased legally and illegally in our communities? So those are the conversations I look forward to having with Leader Beverly, who is the leader of the Democratic caucus, and certainly my Republican colleagues. We will work with anybody. I think what you will find with this particular freshman class is they are very excited to work in a bipartisan way to do things that make all Georgians safer.
Any thoughts, Brian? State lawmakers vowed to take part and help with this city issue, including Governor Kemp. And should we have heard more from him after this shooting? And will we hear more from lawmakers, do you think?
Well, you're rarely going to have the governor of a state, particularly one as big as ours, commenting on localized crime, even though it is here in our capital city and very high profile in Georgia media. But where the governor and the attorney general, Chris Carr, have hit this issue is in creating the gang prosecution task force. This is something that they talk about a lot. And, you know, I know in Chris Carr's campaign on which I was involved, it was a major part of his platform talking about the fact that we have gangs in all 159 counties in the state, and they are violent. They are the drivers of much of this violent crime. They are the drivers of much of organized retail crime. They are the orchestrators of a lot of our human trafficking. I mean, they are just a collection of every bit of evil that you can think of and grouped together. I think Tanya hit on some really important things. The 8-year-old being recruited, I think, is one of the greatest travesties. And I don't know how we fix that. I rely on community leaders who have solutions. But the problem is, by the time they get to be 16 or 17, we have a major societal problem. These are dangerous individuals who have been desensitized to the repercussions of violence. And it's on purpose. You want that is the purpose, is to make them desensitized so they can carry out these crimes. And I think the law enforcement is going to have to deconstruct the 16 to 25-year-olds and put them behind bars, because I think that's what we must do to protect innocent people. And then we got to figure out what we do with that 18 to 14 year old, 18 to 15, 8 year old to 15 year old. Tanya's right. I mean, mental health, we've got a mental health crisis coming out of COVID. We've got learning loss coming out of COVID. All of these, we had these problems before COVID, right? And this isn't new, but it's made all of these things worse. And I think we're going to have to, there's a renewed appreciation, not renewed, there's a new appreciation, rather, for the importance of mental health services. We didn't get to talk about Speaker David Ralston because he died after our last taping. And I hope we can circle back to his legacy. But one of them, my friends, is that mental health bill that passed last year. It was part of the heart of his heart and soul. And he made it happen. And it's an indication of our state acknowledging the importance of this quilt, this patchwork of things that we're going to have to do to solve these problems.
Yeah, he was big on tackling crime as well. Andre Dickens says, parents know where your kids are at all times. And, you know, I guess that is a start. Tanya, thanks for coming along and keeping hope alive a little for us, you know, during this time. We certainly do appreciate your perspective today. Thanks for joining us on Political Breakfast.
Thank you so much, Lisa. It was truly my pleasure.
Good to see you.
Thank you.
When we come back, we have a runoff race, don't we? That we need to touch on. That yes. Race for the U.S. Senate seat. And when we come back, in those long lines, early voting lines, when we return.
Support comes from Grady Health Foundation, presenting Move for Grady Saturday, April 27th, featuring a family-friendly bike ride through Atlanta's in-town neighborhoods. There's a ride, run, or walk distance for everyone, benefiting Grady Health System. More at moveforgrady.com.
You love free. And at Ameris Bank, so do we. That's why we're proud to offer worry-free, hassle-free Ameris Bank free checking. Manage your money your way with convenient access to digital, mobile, and telephone banking, all with no monthly service fee or minimum balance requirements. At Ameris Bank, we're with you. For more information or to open an account, visit our local bankers in person or online at amerisbank.com/free checking. Other fees such as overdraft fees may apply. Ameris Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
All right, welcome back to Political Breakfast. We are just days away from the December 6th runoff election. And Warnock, Walker out there stumping crazy. And then Georgians are just lining up at the polls, trying to cast that ballot. Were you surprised at the huge early voting turnout? Theron, I'll begin with you.
Yes. And no. Yes, because, you know.
I'm laughing because that's kind of my answer, too. Yes.
Yeah,
no.
You know, because it's kind of like, you know, Lisa, I wanted to talk on this quickly. Yes, I was surprised because one of the things that I know the Warnock campaign sort of, not, I don't want to say feared, but they definitely wanted to close this out in November, right? Because historically, turnout is always dropped for Democrats in runoff. However, we proved that to be wrong in 2021 when we saw an increase. So I think no, because the Warnock campaign is battle tested. They've been in a tough runoff before. So knowing the senator and his campaign team, they were like, hey, we got to be ready if we go to a runoff. And so instantly you saw them engaging their voters and getting the base back out. So I think if you just look at the trends, again, they're trending in the right direction for Senator Warnock. A lot of Black and Brown people are voting and white people as well. And young. So that's what I was going to go to. So now what I'm getting a little bit more hopeful is that you see young people, many of whom who did vote or maybe did not vote in the first election, coming back out. However, O'Brien's going to get on this too, is that, look, Governor Kemp showed us something. And, you know, I'm going to wait till this election is over, Lisa. Y'all was probably wondering why haven't I went on my rant yet about how we need to change things in the Democratic Party. I just don't want to do it just yet. But Governor Kemp showed us that, look, Republican voters have learned how to turn their votes out early, too. Probably not as much as Democrats. And so you look at some of these counties, these Republican counties where Governor Kemp did well, Herschel Walker did well, particularly in these suburban areas, the turnout there is steady as well. And so I think that this race is going to be close. I think it will come down to how many people actually vote early and absentee and on Election Day. And I give Senator Warnock the edge because I think that he's closing this campaign out the right way. It's a confluence of being on the attack, but also inspiring voters to go out and vote, giving them a picture that is very, very bright in our future in this state, and showing that he can actually work across the aisle and talk about issues that matters to voters.
I want to point out that Raphael Warnock has gone back to Alvin, the Beagle, who we have discussed here many times. And I want to point out that I think that they've been listening to Political Breakfast, and they understand that people don't like that he was, that it seemed like he was pretending to have a dog that wasn't his, right? And so now that they put a disclaimer on the TV ads, I don't know if y'all seen this, but it's like number one canine volunteer or campaign volunteer or something. So they have like, they put some words up on the screen so that you know this is not Raphael Warnock's dog. He's not pretending that this is his dog. The early voting has surprised me a little bit. Sunday morning, I was texting some political friends and I was like, God, I just don't see any excitement, any enthusiasm out there. So now, granted, I've been kind of in my Thanksgiving respite. I haven't been talking to people in our circles, but I just don't think people are all that tuned in. And then I tried to go vote Sunday night at the Briarwood Recreation Center in Brookhaven, and it was already dark, and there was a line out the building, down the sidewalk, cars lined up and down the road getting in. And we turned around and left. Yep. I still got to go vote because I wasn't going to stand it.
Oh, no. Patience, Brian. Stood at Buckhead Library for an hour and a half.
Yeah, my experience was a little different. So shout out to Chairman Rob Pitts, who texts me. Well, I'm not going to lie. I don't think the chairman texts. I'm sorry to put his business out
there
like that.
I'll let you cut in line.
But no. I did it the right way, Lisa. But no, his chief of staff reached out to one of my colleagues, Lori Smith, who Brian knows I work with, and said, you should come down to the Fulton County downtown building. So I turned around, paid for parking, only 1 hour, and shout out to the poll workers. They listen to Political Breakfast.
All right.
They say we're not going to talk politics in the voting area, but right. they definitely gave me a little wink to say, look, we're pretty happy with the turnout so far. But no, it took me less than 15 minutes.
Good for you.
Government Center. Yeah.
Good for you.
You know, longtime listeners know what I always say about early voting. Don't go the first day.
You know, you do say that. Yeah.
I always say that. And so I need to take my own advice. Sunday wasn't the first day in DeKalb, but I'm presuming that I'm going to be able to go later this week and get it done. And let me say something to Republican voters and to those around the state. I didn't particularly agree with some party organizations continuing to sue to close down weekend voting. I think they're making a legitimate legal argument. I mean, I feel like the judicial rulings don't follow what the law says, which is concerning. But the optics of trying to have fewer voting days weren't very good. And to me, the answer wasn't to have fewer voting days. It was for Republican counties to also have weekend voting days. That is what we should have done. And Republicans need to know this. Democrats banked a lot of votes for Warnock on Saturday and Sunday. And maybe even in some counties, like I don't know, like Douglas, for example, was open even before Thanksgiving. It's going to be a heavily Democratic county. And, you know, over the weekend, you had over 30,000 votes in Gwinnett and DeKalb, over that much just in Fulton alone. One thing that really struck me as concerning for Republicans is not only was the black percentage of that early vote that's in there already in the high to mid 40s, which is, I mean, staggeringly high. But in Fulton County, there was this mass turnout of 18 to 25-year-olds turning out at the same raw numbers as 50 to 55-year-olds, according to a tweet from Gabe Sterling from the Secretary of State's office. And I'm sure these are kids who are home from college, that kind of stuff. And so they were voting while they were at home for Thanksgiving. But if that is indicative of something happening out there, the Democrats are in a good spot. They have some momentum. And Republicans have to close that gap this week. They cannot wait till election day where things may come up. You know, kid gets sick at school, you get a flat tire, whatever it is, get to the polls this week to vote, because I'm telling you, the Democrats operation is in full force. Raphael Warnock has got significantly more money. For those of us who are watching TV over the holidays, the weight of message from Warnock was much heavier than it was from Herschel Walker. We saw a lot more of those. I saw Alvin the Beagle numerous times over my holiday. So And I'm also seeing it digitally. I'm seeing, you know, anytime I go online to read, there's a Warnock early vote ad there, not one from Herschel Walker. And one thing we mentioned that Theron and I talked about before the election was like, why are we not getting more political mail? Like in 2018, like my wife, you know, who's the white suburban mom that we all talk about, college educated mom, she got loaded with Stacey Abrams mail. We got none this year in the general. And over the weekend, it was very specifically to her. She got a abortion-related message from the Democrats in the mail. So the Democratic money advantage is real, and it's making a real impact, and we're seeing it.
All right. Well, we will join you next week live for Political Breakfast the day after Election Day. So we'll see how all these early votes and you know, mount up, you know, who the winner is, who the winner will be come December 7th. But before we get out of here, I just want to say rest in peace, David Ralston. Boy, what he will be missed. He will be missed, won't he?
He will. And, you know, Lisa, I talked to him probably about a couple weeks before he passed and about a week before he made the announcement that he was not going to seek to be the speaker anymore. And you guys remember when he was on this broadcast, I mean, you know, we always referred to each other as friends, and he's truly my friend, which shocked a lot of people that a Republican and Democrat like Brian and I can actually have a true friendship. But another thing I want to say, Lisa, I've said a lot of things about how he was just a steady hand, open door policy. Democrats came out and said many great things about him as Republicans. Brian definitely talks about the Mental Health Parity Act, which he led. But I also want to talk about one thing that he does not get enough credit for. And I can talk about this now because if he was still alive, he probably wouldn't want me to, you know, talk about it too publicly. But I think Spiro and everybody would forgive me. But it was Speaker Ralston who led the effort to stop the Republicans, led by then State Senator Burt Jones, to try to take the world's busiest and most efficient airport away from the city of Atlanta. It was his relationship with then Mayor Bottoms, and more importantly, the Dean of the Georgia Legislature, Calvin Smyre. And we had many conversations about how he was not going to let that happen. And I think he deserves a lot of credit for being a Republican, stopping something that he thought was wrong. Now, he did say we may need a little oversight, but he was never in support of a full takeover. And I just remember working with him on that, and we would spend hours together crafting up a strategy. So he's definitely going to be missed. And I want to definitely offer my condolences to his family. And I'm going to think about him every day. And when I tend to get a little too partisan, Lisa, I'm going to say to myself, what would Ralston want at this moment?
And, he was respected across the board and trusted by many. Trusted by many.
Absolutely. I mean, just very straight up guy. And I've been drinking a lot of red wine in his honor. Those of us that spent some time with him, he definitely enjoyed his red wine.
Yeah, he missed that booming voice too. Yeah.
Well, we knew that there was something seriously wrong when we no longer saw him drinking red wine. We knew that he was having to take some major lifestyle changes, and now we know why. David Ralston was an integral part of the Deal administration, and I go to that because that's where I was the most involved. And, you know, my old boss, Governor Deal, spoke at the funeral and said none of the great things that we did during those 8 years would have been possible without David Ralston. And to echo part of what Theron said, he did a lot of things that he's proud of, like the mental health bill, the medical marijuana legislation or law that we have in place now. And I think we actually need to expand that and improve that law this year as a tribute to David Ralston, because that's still not in the hands of patients just yet. And, but also the transportation bill in 2015, you know, we still see the orange barrels all over the state because we had a dedicated funding source that he was critical in getting passed. And he did do stuff behind the scenes, stuff that necessarily wasn't going to be as popular with the Republican base, like standing up for the airport, standing up for the fuel tax credit, making sure that we didn't pass laws that were going to hurt our business climate, like the like some of the religious exemption laws that we've had come through the legislature over the last decade. But David Ralston was the longest serving speaker of a House in the country at the time of his death. Now, And Georgia's sort of unique because we also had Tom Murphy, who served 28 years as Speaker, which is absolutely unheard of. But he served such a long time, and he was beloved by both sides. At his funeral, you saw a bipartisan turnout, which is so crushingly rare these days, to see people having a human connection beyond an ideological connection. And I love the quote from Representative Mac Jackson, who's a Black Democrat from Washington County, and just a wonderful, sweet man. I ran into him at an event recently, and he was talking about Speaker Ralston coming down to Tenille, a tiny little town in Washington County, to go to Mac's church. And he was like, you know, Speaker, why are you doing this? And he said, because you're my friend, Mac. And that is David Ralston. He was a great Georgian, and those stories show that for him, his love of Georgia didn't know color, it didn't know party, it didn't know geography. He served us all, and he did it very well, and we're all the better for having him had that position. And I want to say what I said on TV upon his death. There are very few people who merit a statue in the Capitol Plaza area, whether it's over at, you know, Liberty Plaza, which he played a role in getting built, or on the Capitol grounds or in the Capitol. David Ralston is one of those people who meets that standard. And I do hope that now that he is gone, he has left this life, I think it's time for us to have a serious conversation about how we memorialize him and his service.
Mm. We spoke with Calvin Smyre the day after his death, and he said, a monumental tree has fallen. Mm. Rest in
Great
peace.
Quote. Great
yeah,
quote.
Rest in peace, David good Ralston. Man. Thanks for another good show, guys. Brian Theron, we'll see you next week, or hear you next week live on Political Breakfast the day after the election.
Thank Fantastic. You. Go vote. War not for the win.
Go vote and go Dawgs.
Go Falcons.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
The Gold Dome Scramble podcast is now Plugged In, a WAB politics podcast. New name, same in-depth, on-the-ground reporting from us, WAB politics reporters Sam Greenglass and Raul Bally. We'll cover local, state, and national politics as we go beyond the headlines with journalists, voters, and politicians. New episodes drop Fridays starting April 26th. Listen and subscribe at WAB.org or your favorite podcast platform.